Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. I am your host, aptly enough, Michael Cutler. I hope you've all had a terrific week, certainly a tumultuous week, but we will get to what's been going on shortly. For those of you who are familiar with me, you know I'm a retired senior special agent of what used to be the Immigration and Naturalization Service. Spent 30 years working for that agency whose mission, at least in theory, has been picked up by various components of DHS, an agency that is so screwed up and inept, I've come to call DHS the Department of Homeland Surrender, and there is ample evidence about just how screwed up that agency is. You know, it's the kind of thing where the closer you look, the worse it looks. Before we go any further, I just want to put a couple of important websites out there. First of all, if you want to find out more about the mischief that I've been up to since I left the old INS, Immigration and Naturalization Service, please visit my own personal website, michaelcutler.net. That's one word, MichaelCutler, michaelcutler.net. Also, I am a senior fellow with a terrific organization based in beautiful downtown Santa Barbara, California, as they always like to remind me, especially in the winter. In the summer, not so much, but it's always, almost always beautiful there, warm weather right on the Pacific coast. That terrific organization, the great folks over there, is Californians for Population Stabilization. Their website is capsweb.org, C-A-P-S. Again, standing for Californians for Population Stabilization. Been involved with them for a number of years. They have seen the damage done not by immigration, but by illegal and uncontrolled immigration. You know, it's great to have a nice glass of wine with a good meal, a cold beer on a hot day, nothing like it. But that's far different from being a falling over drunk. And right now, there is no integrity to the immigration system. Anarchy reigns supreme. And as I always like to point out, the immigration laws are not a single issue, but a singular issue because it impacts so many of the challenges and threats that we face. I'm going to be having a wonderful guest host joining me today, Lauren Martell. I believe this is her phone, but we're about to find out.
Hello, Michael. It is Lauren. How are you?
Boy, am I good or what? I am terrific. Happy Friday. I thank you for joining us this Friday afternoon, Friday evening. How have you been?
Doing really well. It's actually a great, you know, great summer down here in Hilton Head, South Carolina, and so we're starting to really enjoy it. Although we had a bank robbery right in our plantation the other day, so it's exemplary that times are tough in the neighborhood. So,
and you know why they go to the bank?
Caught the guy.
And you know why they go to the bank, right? That's where the money is. I mean, Willie Sutton said it, didn't he?
Well, that's where the money's supposed to be, yeah. Mm-hmm.
It used to be. You never know.
Right.
I'm not sure
what he got out of there yesterday.
Maybe he got some Monopoly money.
Could be, but he eventually got caught. We all thought maybe he ran and got into a boat or something and jetted out.
But it did cause
a big hoopla. Yeah, it really did. It caused a big hoopla down here. You know, and I was actually having to go to court and got kind of caught in the traffic because they were literally watching, you know, every car that left the plantation to see, you know, who was in it and what was going on. So fortunately, you know, I didn't know what was going on, but the police cars kept coming in and coming in and coming in. And I was like, I wonder if they're going to my house for anything.
Uh-oh.
But the good news is that
it
wasn't.
We should point out that you're an attorney, which is probably why I suspect you were heading to court.
That is absolutely true. I was heading to court on behalf of someone.
Once again, I've read your mind. You see, once again, I'm infallible today. Are we doing great or what?
You're on a roll. We just need to get you in front of the Congress.
Well, I've tried. You know, it's time that those people in Washington had listenings instead of hearings. What do you think?
I absolutely agree. I think that their listening skills have much to.
With a couple of exceptions, Lou Barletta being one and Jeff Sessions being the other. And I'm going to quote Jeff Sessions, but I see we have someone else on the line. Let me just see who's joining us right now.
Okay, great.
Hi, this is Mike Cutler. Who am I speaking with? Well, I guess not. Okay, well, there we go.
Well, you know, I was watching actually a little C-SPAN, too, and a couple other guys caught my eye in their line of questioning, they did an extremely good job. The rep, Carrie, pronounce his last name for me, Carrie Bovidos and John Micah out of Florida were actually asking questions of Thomas Holm and a couple other of the people that are on, you know, border patrol and border security.
Right.
And, you know, they were asking some just basic questions. You know, one of the gentlemen was originally in the military. And so he said, you know, a basic thing that we like to do every night before we go to sleep, and all Americans kind of go to sleep every night with this presumption that, you know, they're safe and that the perimeter is secure. So even that basic question that he was asking some of these guys in high levels of job descriptions, making a lot of money, making overtime, I think that was one of their big concerns, was whether they get overtime and reverse escort jobs and stuff. But so these guys, they basically, you know, can't even answer that question. And he asked it like three different ways, but they just simply cannot answer whether or not our perimeter is secure.
Well, they don't know that it is. You have Janet Napolitano claiming that the southern border is secure. Of course, it's not. And you know, there's a real metric we could use, Lauren. This nonsense about counting Border Patrol arrests is really crazy. They think that they arrest 1 in 3, 1 in 5, 1 in 10. Nobody knows. I was on with Neil Cavuto not long ago, and he said, you know, Mike, the arrests are down by the Border Patrol. So doesn't that mean there are fewer illegal aliens in the United States? And I said, no, that's kind of like taking attendance by asking people not present to raise their hands. And it's not just the Mexican border that provides access to our country. In point of fact, folks, we have 50 border states. Any state that has a seaport or an international airport is a border state. The terrorists who so savagely attacked us on 9/11 didn't run the border. They came through ports of entry. The Tsarnaev brothers, who savagely attacked the Marathon on April 15th in Boston, on Patriots Day of all days, were admitted into the United States with passports and visas. They didn't run the border. The entire immigration system needs to be thought of as a system. You need to think of it as holes in the bottom of a boat. And the obvious question, well, the obvious answer to the question of how many holes do you need to have in the bottom of your boat for it to wind up at the bottom of the lake is just one will suffice. Well, let me tell you, the bottom of the boat, where immigration is concerned, looks like Swiss cheese, and they're actually debating whether or not they should partially plug one of the holes. Pardon me. Meanwhile, if you go to an airport, you're likely to see 85-year-old women getting patted down, 5-year-old kids being put through X-ray machines. This is the lunacy that we are dealing with. I've been on the phone all day speaking with people all over the country because so many people are so worked up and so upset, and then the Senate goes along and passes comprehensive immigration reform. And I was in Washington last week with the Act for America group, and one of the things that I did was I got up in front of the audience and I read something, and I'm going to read it to my listeners tonight because it seemed to resonate with the folks who were in attendance. Let me start out with three great quotes from George Orwell, the man who invented Newspeak and Big Brother. Boy, does that seem appropriate tonight. He started out saying, in a time of universal deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. He also said, We've now sunk to a depth at which the restatement of the obvious is the first duty of intelligent men. And finally, political language, it is designed to make lies sound truthful and murder respectable, and to give an appearance of solidity to pure wind. And I was thinking of solidity and border security and this whole business about political language. And then it dawned on me, you see, I do things by connecting dots, something that so many members of Congress seem inept or incapable or unwilling to do. And I said, you know, the two oldest professions, why don't we draw an obvious series of analogies? Now, we all know the two oldest professions, of course, are prostitution and politics. And I came up with my top five list, Lauren. Let me just go through this real quickly for the audience here. Both professions begin with the letter P. Both professions involve lots of people getting screwed. In both professions, the practitioners will assume any position, no matter how ridiculous, uncomfortable, or contrary to common sense, for the right price. In prostitution, the clientele bring their fantasies that the prostitute tries to fulfill. In politics, the constituents bring their concerns, and the politicians respond by making promises that they fulfill by creating fantasies. STDs can give the clients of prostitutes a case of buyer's remorse, or perhaps a case of something else, while voters may well suffer buyer's remorse when they come to find out what their elected official does once he or she is sworn into office. Talk about the gift that keeps on giving. Doesn't that work?
Mm-hmm. You know, and I said, you know, it really does. And unfortunately, it's sad. I mean, it's funny, but it's really sad that we've stooped so low. I would say we're pretty much in the gutter is where we are right now. When that analogy makes perfect sense to, you know, what are supposed to be servant leaders enforcing and defending the Constitution of the United States. And where the lie really comes, I mean, I really got this came very clear to me in sort of an epiphany when they were just starting to talk about the numbers of what, you know, Janet Napolitano is throwing out there that she, you know, had in custody 475,000, you know, people in custody this past year. And apparently they have like 34,000 beds, which, you know, the taxpayers pay. Now, of that, 410 were actually deported. And of all of these people who are literally jumping our border or coming over here illegally in some criminal manner, of all of these, there's at least 150 countries represented. It is not all Mexicans that are coming over. There's Guatemalans.
No, and this is really the important point to make. Let me read something real quickly, because this comes back to this issue of national security. You know, when I listen to a debate, whether or not should we insecure the border, how much is secure enough, and on ad nauseum. Go back to what the 9/11 Commission had to say. You know, I provided testimony to the 9/11 Commission. I've arrested terrorists in my career. Obviously, they have to come here to attack us. That was one of the first things noted in the 9/11 Commission staff report on terrorist travel. But here's two quick quotes. The first is found on page 98 of the 9/11 Commission staff report on terrorist travel. Terrorists in the 1990s, as well as the September 11th hijackers, needed to find a way to stay in or embed themselves in the United States if their operational plans were to come to fruition. As already discussed, this could be accomplished legally by marrying an American citizen, achieving temporary worker status, or applying for asylum after entering. In many cases, the act of filing for an immigration benefit sufficed to permit the alien to remain in the country until the petition was adjudicated. Terrorists were free to conduct surveillance, coordinate operations, obtain and receive funding, go to school and learn English, make contacts in the United States, acquire necessary materials, and execute an attack. Pardon me. Now, ask yourself, folks, are they not describing the Deferred Action Program right now, where hundreds of thousands of undocumented, quote-unquote, illegal aliens have been granted employment authorization, which means that they're also being given official identity documents that enable them to get Social Security cards and, in some states, driver's licenses. And they're not even doing a face-to-face interview. They don't have the resources to go out and knock on doors and show photographs and ask people, do you know this guy? Is this really his name? So there's no way of knowing who they are. There's no way of knowing how long he or she has been here. And so they put into comprehensive reform all these little hoops. Oh, well, the guy's gonna, or the gal has to have been here for at least so many years. How do you verify how long an illegal alien has been present in the country if they ran the border and created no record of their entry when they ran the border? And there's no way of doing interviews, and there's no way of conducting field investigations. So anything that is written in these documents will probably sail right through the process, including what we've seen terrorists do in the past. Now, the other thing that they said on page 47, same report, once terrorists entered the United States, their next challenge was to find a way to remain here, going back to the embedding issue again. Their primary method was immigration fraud. For example, Yusuf, that would be Ramzi Yusuf, and Ajaj concocted bogus political asylum stories when they arrived in the United States. Mahmoud Abu Alima, involved in both the World Trade Center and landmark plots, received temporary residence under the Seasonal Agricultural Worker Program, authored primarily, by the way, by our good friend Chuck Schumer of the Eight Gangsters lately. After falsely claiming that he had picked beans in Florida, Mohammed Salameh, who rented the truck used in the bombing, overstayed his tourist visa. He then applied for permanent residency under the Agricultural Worker Program but was rejected. Iyad Mohammed Ismail, who drove the van containing the bomb, took English language classes at Wichita State University in Kansas on a student visa. Afterwards, he dropped out but remained in the United States out of status. So if you drop out of school and you remain out of status without permission, this administration is seeking to give you employment authorization, not seeking to remove you, even though the 9/11 Commission, for gosh sakes, said, hey, you know what? This was the tactic used by terrorists who embedded themselves in the country. We have the story about Wissam Alous just in the news now, and for whatever reason, the major news organizations will not cover the story. It blows my mind. But Wissam Alous, a citizen of Lebanon, or he was born in Lebanon, got U.S. citizenship by marrying a woman in the army. He concealed the fact he had been a member of Hezbollah, an Iranian-backed terrorist organization, had previously worked for a government contractor as a translator in Iraq for the U.S. Army, and then he tried to get, he got citizenship, by the way, by again concealing his involvement with Hezbollah and allegedly the fact that he had killed an Israeli soldier back in the 1980s and was trying to get a security clearance to get yet another position with the DOD when he was finally arrested by the FBI and charged with lying on his applications. Now, if he had not applied for a security clearance, the likelihood is nobody would have known who he was or the fact that he'd been a member of Hezbollah. Time and time again, and now they want to process, God knows, 20 million, 30 million, nobody knows how many, aliens who want to come to the United States if they're not here already and supposedly work. And Schumer and everybody else is saying, well, we're going to put them on the back of the end of the line. The back of the end of what line? They're here. The line to citizenship? Yeah, if they could get it, I'm sure they'd be happy. But they're more concerned with getting employment authorization and official identity documents. And that line is just about a week or two long, not 10 or 12 years long. It's one lie after another lie. Isn't that remarkable?
Well, it really is. And that just goes back to what you had originally quoted. If you tell a lie long enough, people just start to believe it. And when you really look at this, though, I mean, they're looking to try to get a pat on their back for sending 55% of 410 people deported, and they're convicted criminals. And, you know, they think that that's great. I mean, that's what the job is. And I propose, here's the fallacy, but here's where people, you know, the bottom line is that people who are coming over the border right now have already broken the law. So they need to say, you know, anybody who's over here not going through the proper process of the law is a criminal. That's the way we need to look at it. And so the way the insidious deception comes in is that these guys have diluted it down to, we're just looking for the major threat of who's going to do harm in America. And then they're almost arbitrarily figuring that out through these catch and release programs, because with a $1.7 billion budget for 1 year, like, we send that to Syria yesterday, you know? I mean, this is what they have for a year to try to protect the whole United States of America through, you know, ICE, and that's their budget. And these guys, you know, they're doing these programs called reverse escort. So a juvenile, and there's so many of these juveniles that are jumping the border, they're coming over here, and then let's say they're in Arizona. They literally will fly these juveniles to a place, a holding cell. They call them even refugee, you know, resettlements or something. These holding cells, and on the taxpayer dime, they fly them up to, like, Detroit, which makes really no sense at all. But their answer to that question is, well, we're overwhelmed in Arizona. All the beds are taken. We don't have a place to put these people.
But you know what? Look, first of all, I'm still trying to verify what they're doing and how they're doing it. That might actually be the case. But now here's something to think about. If the beds are overwhelmed in Arizona, what that means is these are OTMs, other than Mexican. Now, I want you to stop and think about it, folks. Okay? Because generally, an illegal Mexican who is caught trying to run the border is simply turned around and sent home. The only people that are being held onto are people who are not from Mexico, but from other Latin American countries, or Asia, or Europe, or Africa. So what this should tell you is that if those detention facilities are filled to capacity, they are filled with OTMs. Again, we come back to the threat of terrorism. So even if I was to agree with the administration, in what little information they are willing to share with us, talk about, they said they were going to be the most transparent administration, if you believe that story, wow. But you can glean from it the magnitude of the problem we're facing, not just people from Mexico who, quote-unquote, want to be farmers and do work Americans won't do. The other thing that you all need to know, really important, is that comprehensive reform doesn't only address illegal aliens who supposedly are already here, and we don't know if they're already here, if they're on their way and they're going to lie about when they got here. As I've explained, there's no way of verifying entry data. But it also has provisions to create multiple. I mean, we're talking about over years' time, millions of visas for foreign workers to come to America to compete with doctors, to compete with computer programmers, to compete with engineers and technicians and biologists and scientists, the high-tech visas. Now, this isn't because we don't create enough of those graduates in America. We do. But it's because the likes of Bill Gates and the others who are being greedy beyond understanding, beyond comprehension, don't want to pay a decent living wage to high-tech workers the same way that the folks in the construction industry would rather hire day laborers than hire skilled tradesmen. So they go to India and elsewhere for high-tech workers. And then we hear the argument, well, we're educating them at our schools, so American companies need to reap the reward. Well, first of all, I'd be hard-pressed to call most of the major corporations American companies today. Think of how many so-called American companies that used to be American companies don't pay taxes in America. Think of what Apple did playing a shell game with moving various components of its organization all over the world to avoid paying most taxes. They also don't hire American workers, and they often outsource their factories overseas to avoid environmental laws, labor safety standards, and wage situations. So to call these people or these corporations American is a stretch beyond belief. The other day I was listening to a company advertising, our stuff is assembled by the United States or in the United States, and they muffled the word assembled. So in other words, the stuff they're selling obviously is made of components manufactured outside the United States, so whoopee-doo, they're assembling the foreign components at some plant here inside the United States. It's a shell game. And by the way, we wind up training terrorists who want to kill us. There was that woman who wanted to, and I'm trying to recall her name, I'm having a senior moment, but she was the woman who was educated at, I believe, MIT and Brandeis, had a PhD in biochemistry, and she was out to kill us. We are educating people from other countries who have nefarious goals. We don't even know who these students are half the time because according to the GAO, there are now approximately 850,000 foreign students in the United States attending, supposedly, more than 10,000 schools. We're not talking about Princeton, Yale, and Harvard necessarily. We could be talking about some school that teaches people how to do haircuts and, you know, nail polish and woodworking. Really?
Right.
I mean, 10,000
But doesn't it make
schools?
Perfect sense, though, Mike? Why wouldn't we try to help everybody like that, really? I'm just going to play a little devil's advocate here. You know, why not give everybody a big head start? We're so good, you know?
Well,
why shouldn't we just, why shouldn't we just help people who want to kill us?
Well, yeah, right. Well, I mean, unless we want to have a suicide pact. But here's the problem. As an immigration agent, I arrested many people who were living in abject squalor and poverty in their home country. I never saw them as my enemy. And I got to tell you, I never will. They are desperate. Mm. I feel bad for mm-hmm. them. But there's a couple of things that everybody out there needs to understand. First of all, today 1 in 6 Americans is on food stamps. We've never had a higher poverty rate or foreclosure rate in the history of the United States, maybe since the Depression, perhaps. So Americans are in distress. The middle class is going the way of the dodo bird, which marches lockstep with what Alan Greenspan said when he went before the Immigration Subcommittee in the U.S. Senate, Chuck Schumer chairing it, said that we've created a privileged elite, and he was referring to Americans who we would normally think of as middle class. He said that we've got to greatly reduce inequality in wages, not based on religion or ethnicity or gender or age, because I'd agree with all that, any reasonable person would, but based on skill. The American dream, Lauren, as you and I both know, was this concept that you're supposed to an education, acquire a trade. And certainly my dad was a tradesman. He was a plumber. He would always puff up his chest a bit when people asked him what he did for a living. He'd say, I'm a plumber by trade. In other words, I went through an apprenticeship program, which, by the way, takes 5 years. I don't think that a talented, skilled plumber or carpenter or bricklayer or electrician or roofer or tinsmith is less essential to America than an accountant or a school teacher. This is a big orchestra, and we all have an instrument to play. But what Greenspan said is, if you've taken the time to become a tradesman, if you've taken the time to get a degree, you still shouldn't make much more money than the guy that drops out of school. This is a form of communism. I don't know how else to describe it. This is a way of destroying the middle class. So this is what we're witnessing. So the real Trojan horse in this bill is that it would destroy wages and working conditions for Americans. And you need to understand, folks, that prior to the Second World War, the task of enforcing and administering the immigration laws fell to the Labor Department, because that was the whole idea. Shield American workers from unfair competition, which was how we built up and then grew the middle class, which created the American dream. Now we're going in the opposite direction, where America, or at least its supposed leaders, are looking at Mexico and saying, that's the destination for America. Believe it or not, I believe that the Greenspans of the world, I believe that the Bill Gates of the world and the Chuck Schumers of the world and the Harry Reids of the world and even our friend Mr. Rubio want an oligarchy in America such as that which exists in Mexico. So you will either be fabulously wealthy, or you'll be scrounging around in garbage cans looking for scraps to eat. This is about dismantling the middle class.
Harry Reid really got some perks in this bill, too, with the Nevada casinos. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that's in these, what is it, 1,200 pages? You know, once again, something that gets worked on and amended, and then within almost a week is, you know, sent out to everybody and immediately voted on.
They don't have a week.
They
sometimes, no. A week, I doubt it. From what I've been told by my buddies on the Hill, and I do have friends in Washington on the Hill, sometimes this is done overnight. So even if you could speed read, unless you have 15 or 20 people sitting there taking notes and then trying to brief the member of Congress so that at 10 a.m. they can go vote, lots of luck. It can't be done. But
I submit to you that's gross negligence and reckless endangerment of American
people. Well, it's malfeasance is what it is. Mm-hmm. This is supposed to be a government of the people, by the people, for the people. I guess we now need to define what we mean by the word people. Bill Clinton challenged us to figure out what the word is means. Now I guess we have to figure out what the word people means. Let me just read something from one of my real heroes in Washington, the gentleman by the name of Senator Jeff Sessions. He honored me tremendously back in 06 or 07. I wrote a commentary for the Washington Times where I said that back then they should rename comprehensive immigration reform the Terrorist Assistance and Facilitation Act, because it would require giving millions of people identity documents with no way of verifying their identities. Small problem. He quoted me on three separate days. Today, Senator Sessions, if I'm fortunate enough and you or your folks are listening, it's my turn to quote you. He went to the floor ahead of the final vote on S-744. And boy, oh boy, this took, as we say in Brooklyn, chutzpah, really strong guts, a real spine. And he is one of my heroes, along with Lou Barletta, Steve King, Senator Vitter. There's a few, but boy, oh boy, they are few and far between, unfortunately. Here we go. U.S. Senator Jeff Sessions, a senior member of the Senate Judiciary Committee, delivered a speech on the Senate floor today regarding the Gang of Eight immigration plan ahead of its final vote. Sessions' remarks as prepared follow. The bill before us rides high on a high ideal, but is nowhere close to what it promises. It is fatally flawed. If passed, it will not work. This flawed bill did not come about because of inadvertence, chance, error, ignorance, or mistake. It came about as a direct result of the fact that the forces that shaped it all had goals that were important to them, but these goals are not coterminous with the interests of the nation as a whole. The Realpolitik gang seemed fine with that. They openly reported for weeks that these interests were working through the legislation and their differences, and soon the gang would have a bill that, having been blessed by the powerful interests that had been invited to the meetings, would be delivered to the Senate for adoption. They were so proud of this process that they, the Magnificent Eight, would stick together all for one, once for all, and defeat any amendment that dared to alter this, quote, delicate agreement, unquote. They would consider amendments, of course, but nothing serious. One would not want to disturb the delicate sensibilities of these sensitive folks. You know, the folks who've come together for the common good. Mr. Richard Trumka, union boss. Mr. Tom Donahue, leader of the Big Mules agriculture conglomerates. La Raza, the Immigration Lawyers Association. Our high-tech billionaires who, having delivered magnificent computers, now desire to benefit us by their political genius. And meatpackers. You must know, friends, that when the Gang of Eight said there was a delicate balance, a fragile agreement, they weren't talking primarily about the agreement among themselves. That was secondary. They were referring to the special interest forces that were in the room writing the bill. Those interests, those forces had signed in blood. The gang then signed in blood to fight off any serious ideas that would violate the secret pact. Although the gang and the cabal that had confederated and combined together to set the immigration policy of the United States were desperate to keep it a secret, there was another dominant force behind the legislation, and that was President Obama. His team was there every step of the way, surely providing much of the drafting work. We know this because Ms. Munoz couldn't keep it a secret. She made sure to reveal to the New York Times that she and President Obama were there every step of the way, much to the discomfort of the gang, especially the Republicans, who had been anxious to declare the bill was written by entrepreneur job creators, e.g. the Chamber of Commerce. This presumably would cause Republicans to relax, knowing that what's good for the Chamber of Commerce is good for America. And with a very favorable judiciary makeup, four of the gang being on the committee, they started executing the plan. Senator Schumer, on occasion, would give Republican gang members a pass. They could break ranks and vote with the people on an issue as long as there was enough votes to kill the pesky amendment. And so it was. Oh, and one more important thing, the money. There would be money to run campaigns, or campaign-like ads, rather, all over America to promote the bill, to promote senators, to protect senators, and who knows, maybe to provide political contributions to those who vote right. The combine had it rolling until last week when the wheels almost came off. Senators and the American people saw that it had more holes than Swiss cheese. And finally, let me just read this. I don't want to keep going on, and you could read the rest by going to my website, michaelcutler.net. Oh, and I'm hopeful that capsweb.org will put it up as well. Clearly, the bill lacked the simple conviction that after amnesty, the lawlessness must end. The metrics, the standard for enforcement at the border, were weakened. E-Verify was pushed back for 5 years. Interior enforcement was further diminished. The citizenship service was set up to fail. Entry-exit visa system was destroyed. Border enforcement promises would never be achieved. Senator Sessions, if you're listening, boy, oh boy, I take my hat off to you, because I don't know anybody else who has the guts or the integrity to put it out there just the way you did from the floor of the United States Senate in front of those that you accused. You are my hero of the week, if not the year. What do you think of that, Lauren?
Well, I completely agree with you. I mean, that's an amazing statement that he made, and it's, you know, based in fact.
And there's even more. Go to my website. You'll see it.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people have just been talking that everybody's muscles up there, the Congress, the Senate, the muscles have atrophied, and they just don't stand for what's you know, the law and what's the law of the land. And so he clearly did, and he's just a modern-day patriot. And
let me just try. I think we have a call. Maybe this might be my friend Leah Durant. Let me just make sure. Hold on 1 second.
Okay.
This is Mike Cutler. Who am I speaking with?
Hi, Mike. I'm Tim Taylor. How are you?
I'm good, Tim Taylor. How are you? I see you've been holding for a long time. I don't know if you wanted to speak to us or if you just were listening, but I welcome you to the program. Where are you calling from?
Well, I wanted to listen before I actually had anything to say. I'm a big fan of Lauren. She's definitely got her finger on the pulse of what's happening. Calling from Charleston, South Carolina.
Well, you live in a beautiful part of the country, but I didn't think I'm giving you a news bulletin with that statement.
Yeah, come on down. The weather is fine.
Well, I hope to. I've been down to the Carolinas. You know, and you know what's so remarkable, Tim? No matter where you travel across this great country, we the people are far more united than the politicians wish that we were. I don't care if you're a Democrat or a Republican, Jewish, Christian, doesn't much matter. At the end of the day, we're all Americans, and this divisive policy that they've been trying to implement of divide and conquer really has to stop. I think we need to stand shoulder to shoulder, no matter where we're from, and send these bums who voted for this bad legislation packing. What would you say to that, Tim?
I think that elections have consequences. We now live in the land of the shackled and the home of the politically correct. I'm an immigrant.
Where are you from?
I was born in Belfast, Northern Ireland, and my family moved to Rhodesia, which no longer exists. So we understand how a country can be lost overnight. We moved to South Africa, then Canada, and came here, stood in line, received our permanent residencies. We assimilated into this culture. This is my home. I served in the U.S. Army for 7 years. I'm grateful for...
Thank you, sir. Thank you for your service.
...the freedoms that this country has given. And unfortunately, I think too few Americans know the price of freedom. In 1977, 80% of the Congress were veterans, and now less than 19%. And less than 1% is actually serving our country and putting their life on the line. And if you go to many other countries, Israel, South Africa, to name a few, you graduate from high school and you go into service. And I think that if we truly wanted to see our country change for the better, that one rule, which is everybody serves, doesn't have to be armed forces. It could be in a court. It could be, in a hospital. But everybody serves at least 2 years. I think you would see a lot of change.
I couldn't agree with you more, I have to tell you. I was a federal agent for 30 years. I considered it a privilege to serve our nation in that way. And I think it gives you a very different perspective because you feel you have skin in the game. Would you agree?
Absolutely. I'm astonished at the apathy in this country. We lost our country overnight. Rhodesia is an example screaming to the world. If you want to remain apathetic and do nothing, then you go right ahead. But your country, you will lose your country, and it will no longer be the United States of America. It will be the United Socialist States of America, and that's where we're headed.
Well, see, I think a lot of people don't really understand it, and I think too many people would rather be on cruise control. It's a lot easier to not deal with the issue. And what I find especially remarkable, I'm a New Yorker. I lived through 9/11 here in New York City. And I will tell you that everybody that I know in New York is still suffering post-traumatic stress. I can assure you none of us who were here that day are the same. To see the ashes land on my... Go ahead, Tim.
You know, Mike, you can boil a frog to death 1 degree at a time, just incrementally.
I understand.
And I understand. And that's
the principle of the boiling frog.
You throw
them in hot water and they feel it immediately and they jump out, but you do it gradually. But 9/11
exactly.
Wasn't gradual. It should have been a turning point. Let me make a point, though.
Let me make a comparison. We were
low to sleep in 93. Yeah, but you're right. And I testified before Congress in 97, and the Clinton administration ignored it. We were attacked not once but twice by aliens who entered the United States and then attacked us. But my point is this, though, that we were attacked in 1941, December 7th at Pearl Harbor, roughly 3,000 people killed, almost exactly the same number as the number of people who at least immediately died on 9/11. Many more have since perished because of their exposures to toxins and so forth. But imagine the difference. And back then, Pearl Harbor wasn't even a state. It was a territory. Here we were attacked in our heart. We were attacked in New York and we were also attacked in Washington D.C. So you would think that striking at our heart would have evoked an even stronger response, and yet everybody kind of hit the snooze button.
Well, I think the media has had a lot to do with that. The media sort of, it was. I remember that day, and I wasn't there, but I remember the day. It's still clear in my mind, and just the shock and awe of it all, and just really there was a turnaround there, and it was a turnaround for a little while, but then we sort of went back to sleep, and That's exactly what I think the media sort of pushed, and we've been living under a real false sense of security, and it's gotten to the real danger zone now, in my opinion.
Well, Mike, I agree.
When we lived in, when we lived in Rhodesia, guerrilla warfare tactics reigned the day, and all you had to do was, you know, attack one farmer and his family or put one landmine here or there. That's what's happening to our guys over in Iraq. But guess what? Boston just showed us that they're coming. They're coming, and they're here, and the war is not changing. It's evolving. It's not coming to an end. It's evolving. They're here,
and if we don't
get our act together.
Well, let me just say this, Tim. You know, I've arrested terrorists. I've investigated them in my career. On several occasions, I was involved directly with terrorist investigations. It's a mistake to think that terrorists are simply bomb throwers. You know, we sent three men to the moon in the Apollo program. Each time we launched, three men went. I actually had the privilege of meeting Jim Lovell and a few of the men who actually went to the moon. A fascinating meeting with those people. What a treat. But there was an army of people behind the three that sat in the command module on launch day. When you look at terrorist organizations, or look at the Air Force, you have perhaps 3 or 4% of the people who proudly wear the Air Force uniform who are actually pilots. 90-odd percent of the people who wear the uniform are not pilots. The same thing with terrorist organizations. There is an infrastructure in place, and we are talking about people that might be involved with fundraising, either through legal or illegal activities. Back in the late 70s, I worked on investigations involving the burning of grocery stores, what we call bodegas here in New York. And it turned out that they were owned by Palestinians. And it's not that everybody from Palestine is a bad guy. I want to be very clear. I want to be careful about it. We've got to discern bad guy from good guy, and it's very difficult in this day and age without
a scorecard.
Well,
it's doctrine. You know, yeah.
Without
it's doctrine
a scorecard.
That people have.
Yes, but understand the point. When people are here illegally, we certainly have no scorecard. And this, again, adds to our vulnerability. But what they were doing is using those grocery stores to commit coupon fraud and food stamp fraud, and when they thought people would be getting onto them, they burned the buildings down, and people were dying in the buildings who had nothing to do with them. To my judgment, this was an act of terror. People were being injured and killed by people that were raising money for terrorist activities around the world by committing crimes in America. This is ongoing. We know that Iran is working feverishly to perfect its bombs. We know that their shock troops are arriving routinely in Venezuela directly from Tehran. So we know that Latin America is becoming more and more infested by Hezbollah, by Al-Qaeda. They're at terror training camps in the tri-border region of Brazil. And we have politicians actually asking whether or not we should be securing the border. Let's try to figure this out. Imagine if the police came to you and said there's a bunch of thugs roaming the neighborhood, we're trying to round them up, but we're having a hell of a time, and they're pulling off home invasions. Would you have to have a debate with your wife or children or your husband, whatever, about whether or not you should be locking the door at night? Think about that. We're
no,
being
that's,
told
that's
that this
no brainer,
is a situation.
But, well, let me tell you, this is the thing. Can you hear me?
Yes, I hear you fine.
Okay, and Tim's really right, and you're right as well. This is it's basically the art of war is many different venues and many different manners in which to, you know, defeat a group of people or a society or, you know, crash an economy, whatever it is. So my point here is that Tim's right in that the bomb throwing stuff distracts people. So we were all in crisis mode again after Boston. And then it's like it's what happens to people when they go from crisis to crisis to crisis is they don't do well in it. It changes people's, you know, the way they operate, their psyche and everything else. And so after Boston, people were like, oh, good, they caught the guys. And then, you know, the media pacified that they caught the guys and blah, blah, blah. But in the meantime, on so many different levels, just like you said, especially hitting the economy. I mean, when we look at this immigration problem, it is such an economical, I mean, it comes down to bottom line, you know, money, dollars and cents. And the greedy people who want this to work, they think they have a benefit in it. But what's ending up happening is it's literally putting American citizens who are entitled under the law of the land to security, you know, at harm's way. And so not just with bomb throwing, but Tim's right about that, because that is there to cause distraction and to
cause pain and suffering and psyche. No, but I think what you might be seeing also is to turn up the heat, to do more of these and more of these and more of these. And understand that the common sense measures you would expect, we're not doing. That's really wherein lies the problem. So,
can I say something? Am I there?
Yeah, go ahead.
Still?
Yeah, go ahead.
You know, the thing that I, we do not think generationally. We have a 5-year plan. We have a 10-year plan.
Two-year plan if you're talking about members of Congress.
Exactly, and that is the problem. You have a generational plan of we intend our jihad will take over the White House versus a 2-year plan. I have to vote this way because if I don't, these guys are going to railroad me in my election and I will lose my power. And, you know, there was some politician, can't remember his name, but he's one of our founding fathers that said something to the effect of, when our legislators find out that they can vote themselves a pay raise, that will be the end of our little democratic experiment. And that's where we are. It's about follow the money. The jihadists are not going to. They don't care about the money. They care about jihad. They care about their faith being proclaimed. The faith of the land, the law of the land, and we don't even think in those terms.
And I understand why we don't, because we have separation of church and state. Understand that, and they don't. So you're dealing with two very different concepts and perspectives on the universe. They can't coexist, and they are trying to come in and trump our law.
I mean, they simply can't coexist.
Mm-hmm. Lauren, you're missing what I'm saying. You're missing what I'm saying. You missed me completely. Our tradition tradition is separation of church and state. Theirs is not. For them, it's inseparable. And that's wherein lies the problem.
I'll tell you, this is what I'm seeing. Go ahead, and I'll talk afterwards about a case I have.
And the whole clause of separation of church and state has been completely taken out of context in the first place. You cannot separate the things that motivate you, your faith. I mean, or lack thereof. You have freedom of, and you have freedom to have religion. And so, therefore, you know, we have to change our mindset. We have to look at this as a generational war against us. I pray that our country will wake up. But if 9/11 hasn't done it, and us pulling out of Afghanistan and Iraq, battlegrounds of our choosing with our finest fighting men, our volunteers, if that hasn't woken this country up, and they're willing to do stupid things like they did this week, voting, ridiculous laws into existence without even finishing the fine print on the thing. It hasn't even been finished. The print isn't even dry.
Hang on, Tim. Look, there's a couple of issues here. First of all, we are not only under attack by jihadists, we are under attack by transnational gangs. It's not just from Mexico, it's from the four corners of the planet. We cannot, and we don't have the ability politically, physically, we can do it. But if we refuse to secure the borders against people who would hurt us, you know, if you want to do a little bit of research, they don't like getting heavily into law because that just puts people to sleep. But please, folks, Title 8, United States Code, Section 1182, this enumerates who we're supposed to keep out. It doesn't say keep out brown skin, Mexicans, whatever. No, it's nothing like that. I lost a good part of my family to the Holocaust. If the law was laid out that way, there's no way I could have enforced it. The law talks about keeping out criminals and terrorists and people with dangerous communicable diseases and mental illness, people who are violent and sex offenders and gang members. And then you have people putting together comprehensive reform saying, okay, even if you're a criminal, we'll give you a waiver. Even if you're a gang member, maybe you've been involved in killing people, as long as you haven't been convicted of killing people, and you sign a statement that says, I will no longer hang out with my gang, that's okay. The whole idea of keeping people out who would kill us has gone away. And we're told, well, it's anti-immigrant to enforce the laws. Nonsense. The immigrants are the folks who are most at risk from transnational gangsters because they threaten and they're able to carry out the threat to not only hurt these folks here inside the country, but to go back to their native countries, whether it's Mexico, whether it's El Salvador, whether it's Russia, whether it's Jamaica, whether it's China, doesn't matter, and do harm to family members should that immigrant speak to law enforcement or should that immigrant refuse to run an errand, quote unquote. They will take a guy off the street and tell him, you're our courier. There's a suitcase. We need you to deliver it to somebody in Chicago. He says, what, are you crazy? I'm not getting involved with you. And they show him a picture of his sister. And they say, listen, we know where she lives. We're going to visit her tomorrow night. The question is, will she survive the visit? That depends on whether or not you deliver the suitcase. They just recruited themselves a courier. So when I hear this insanity about how it's anti-immigrant to enforce the laws, my goodness gracious, this is the craziest thing that I've ever heard in my entire life. The problem that we've had up until now is that the American people have been sitting out the dance. There's going to be a demonstration July 15th. I was hoping that Leah Durant would join us. She's unable. She's on a train. She's been traveling all over the country. July 15th, they're going to Washington, the Black Leadership Alliance. DC March for Jobs is the website, dcmarchforjobs.com. It's really important, folks, because we need to make the members of Congress understand that we are onto them and we won't take it anymore. The idea that we have a government purportedly of the people, by the people, and for the people, refusing to remove people who pose a clear and present danger to national security, to community safety, to the ability of American workers to support themselves and their families, is a betrayal unlike anything that I've ever experienced in my more than six decades of breathing air in this country. We the people are responsible by apathy for not changing the dynamics of our political system, and if we don't do it and do it immediately, the party will be over, and this will all be an academic discussion. And let me tell you one last thought. Immigration is the most serious threat facing America. It's not abortion. It's not school prayer. It's not gay rights. I know everyone gets torqued. And by the way, I'm a lifelong Democrat. On most issues, you would accuse me of being a liberal. And I won't argue with you. I am. This is about America's future and the future of our children. The people who disagree with you on the other political issues, fine. Take those other discussions, put them in a box, put a big bow on it, put it in the back of the closet. If we can't protect America against the terrorists, against the transnational criminals, if we destroy the middle class, all those other discussions and debates will become academic. Any argument on that, Tim?
No. Can I just say one last thing?
Sure.
Michael, I really appreciate your fight. I wish that your show were nationalized, to be honest with you. But I want to say that earlier this
I appreciate
week,
the kind words, by the way. Thank you. And by the way, if you know of any opportunities for speaking engagements for you or the audience, get a hold of me. That's why I've been taking my message around the country, especially since 9/11.
Well, I just want to say earlier this week, a YouTube video was released, and I saw it on Facebook, and it was released by another radio guy out there, but it was a beheading of two Christian bishops in Syria, and these were beheadings done by jihadists, rebels, that we, the wonderful American public, are, through the gracious, loving, generous donations of our beloved czar leader, we're funding their war. We're giving them weapons. And I sat there and I watched in horror as this beheading was completed with a knife, fully cutting both bishops, Christian bishops, heads off. And the American public has never, or hardly ever seen anything like that. And I think if they were to see things like that, as brutal as it is, maybe that would be a wake-up for them to be able to see this is who we are fighting. And as a Rhodesian, as
one of the last Rhodesians
in the world, all I want to say is, as a Rhodesian, I want America to understand I lost my country. It no longer exists. And you, too, can be in my shoes. You, too, could lose your country if you're not about protecting and preserving it.
Well, and Tim, I totally agree with you, too. And, I mean, look at what happened in the United Kingdom, in Britain. I mean, a guy right off the street jumped on a policeman over there. And,
two guys
you know,
did. And the Prime Minister said that maybe the soldiers shouldn't be wearing their uniforms in public. Can you believe that one?
Unbelievable.
You know, we had Mayor Dinkins in New York.
I don't.
Let me tell you, we had Mayor Dinkins in New York, and he said, because there were a lot of chain grabbings where a woman would be wearing a necklace or a guy would be wearing a cross or a Jewish star, and some thug would punch the guy in the face and steal the jewelry. And Dinkins said, well, there's an obvious solution. Don't wear nice jewelry where it's publicly visible. I mean, think about the mindset. Blame the victim. The girl that got raped was obviously too attractive. What in the world was she thinking when she put makeup on and combed her hair? She should have looked homeless and maybe not taken a shower, so maybe she would have cut down on the likelihood of being raped.
Yeah, it's insane, and it's so un-American, you know? It really is. And Obama's really out there saying, you know, exactly that. Don't wear the jewelry. Don't take the shower. Don't stand for what you believe in, no matter what it is. He's basically telling people to stand down right and left. That's what I'm seeing.
Well, and you know what I find interesting, by the way? I said something on Neil Cavuto. I don't know if you saw it, but it was a funny story. I usually get at least several hours in advance when they want me on a TV program and they'll send the car. I'd been working all night. I woke up at 2:30 in the afternoon. I slept in. It was like the first night of sleep I had in something like 3 days. I was still like in a daze. Phone rang, 3:05. Mike, can you come into the studio? And by the way, we can't get you a car. And I ran like crazy because the program was on at 4 o'clock. They wanted me in front of the camera at 4:20. I made it for the 4:30 slot. And I didn't have time to think about it. But what was rattling in my head as I was dodging traffic on my way into Manhattan to be on Cavuto's program, and Neil does a good job, as does Megyn Kelly and some other folks on TV, I was thinking about that image of Mueller, the head of the FBI, sitting there looking like Mr. Mumbles trying to explain what the FBI was doing with the IRS investigation. Added to a long list, Benghazi, Fast and Furious, the investigation of the reporters at Fox News, Rosen in particular. And I thought, wow, just think about that. Think about the IRS investigating people possibly because of political affiliation. And now they're saying, well, they also investigated the liberal groups. Which dawned on me, you know, a couple of things dawned on me, but when I got on the program with Neil, and it really resonated with him, I said, wouldn't it be nice if an illegal alien present in the United States reacted to correspondence from DHS the way that you or I would react to correspondence from the IRS? And, you know, it was funny because after the segment, Neil kept standing there saying to me, I can't believe it, I never thought of that comparison, but you're completely right. Now, understand what happened if, in fact, IRS also targeted the liberal groups. Let me tell you what my take is about all of this, folks, and I could be wrong. But I remember when Trent Lott and Nancy Pelosi, could you imagine a wackier combination for an odd couple? Trent Lott, Nancy Pelosi were vociferous opponents of talk radio. They want the American people to be as stupid and uninformed as possible. And I have a sneaky feeling that there's no doubt that they did target these liberal groups also. I think what disturbed the IRS, if it goes to the top, and the jury is out, but I have my feelings, you know, there's a wonderful Yiddish expression that says when the fish goes bad, it smells from the head. But if, in fact, this came from Washington and there was a political motivation, do you know what I think the motivation was, guys? I think it was that political activists in general scare the bejesus out of the politicians because we're not acting like a bunch of penguins marching lockstep behind one another. What do you think of that?
Well, Mike, Lauren is a great political activist. I'm a great fan of hers. You should do everything you can to try to get her on to the guys on Fox News because she's got some good stuff to say, too. And I appreciate both of you guys for allowing me on your program, and I've enjoyed it immensely.
Well, thank you so much. Tell your friends about
it.
Thank you, Tim. I appreciate the kind words. And you know what? I don't even have enough control over when I get on, but if the opportunity presents itself, I sure will, Tim. And Lauren, you should be proud of the kind remarks. And he's right. You do a great job, I have to tell you.
Well, and he does too. And really, you know, it is about the Bucket Brigade that you have really started, and everybody who gets out there and just, you know, really loves our country and loves the freedoms that we have. And not every country has this. Not any other country really has what we have. And it's worth fighting for. It's worth educating, you know, and reasonably, logically coming to your people's own conclusions based on evidence and thought. I mean, we are thinkers by nature. America is a very wonderful, exceptional country, and we're free thinkers because we are free men and women. And it's such a blessing. It's a blessing to know you, Mike, and I'm just honored to be on your program, too.
Well, it's a delight to have you, Lauren. You certainly add an extra dimension to the shows when you're kind enough to join me. And it's wonderful knowing that there are folks out there who add that extra dimension just by being listeners. You know, it is so difficult in this day and age to get a coherent message out there. Too often, the evening news is nothing more than a food fight. The old saying, if it bleeds, it leads. We really need to have the honest truth. We need to have the facts. And it's been my mission ever since 9/11 to try to provide perspectives and information that you're not likely to get anywhere else. And I hope I'm living up to that mission statement that I've created for myself. Because really and truly, you know, the First Amendment isn't just about freedom of speech, freedom of press, freedom of religion. It's about the right for peaceable assemblage and the right to seek redress of grievances. And we certainly assemble peaceably on this program every week, don't we?
Yes, we do.
Well, Mike,
and you know...
Go ahead, Tim. I'm sorry.
Mike, we hope to convert the other liberal parts of your body, though.
No, I'll tell you.
No, I love.
No, I
love Mike just the way he is. He is who he is.
I am who I am.
You
know, I feel like
Popeye
the Sailor Man. But you know what we are at the end of the day, Tim? We're Americans. And I tell people that even the folks who disagree with you, as long as they do so respectfully and civilly, are living up to their obligations. And I would rather have you as a conservative than have you as an apathetic.
It's sad that we've lost that. We've lost.
What do you think of that statement,
Tim? I like the fact that freedom of thought, what Lauren was saying, freedom of thought and the ability to voice it civilly, it's a unique freedom that this country enjoys. All too often, in other parts of the country and other parts of the world, like those two bishops who were killed, brutally. Were taken not only for thought, not only for what they said, but for what they're thinking. And America has and enjoys that freedom, and that freedom is being quashed. It's being quashed by moments like the IRS. It's been quashed by moments of the bureaucracy, because you know what? The politicians come and go, but the bureaucracy is the worm, the termite that eats away at the wood, even, you know, day and night, even as the politicians don't speak.
You know,
that's being eroded.
Well, you know, you spoke about Rhodesia. I will tell you about the Holocaust. I mean, imagine people being slaughtered wholesale because, quote unquote, they were of the wrong religious belief. Can you imagine anything?
Yes. It's amazing.
It's awful.
So you look at this.
It's crazy that it happened.
It's crazy that seemingly sane people bought into it. And you look at Schicklgruber, Hitler, the piece of trash that he was, and he was the one that was extolling the Aryan race. Did he look Aryan?
No, he wasn't even.
So you look at what people will fall for. You know, you look at the old cigarette commercials. Winston tastes good like a cigarette should. How many people wound up smoking themselves literally to death because somehow an ad campaign convinced them?
Well, I'll tell you, if nothing else comes from your show, there is, I think, you know, what we're generating is non-apathy, and I think there's things that we can still do. And Congress can still stop this bill. I mean, there's still, you know, it's not all is lost. And, I mean, there's even some sort of slip resolution. And so I think anybody who's listening to the program just needs to get on the phone and, you know, spend an hour and tell some of their friends
to
spend an hour on the phone.
DC jobs, right? Go to Washington July 15th. Get your voice heard. You know, maybe I'll be fortunate enough to get to do yet another hearing, although I really wish they would hold listenings in Washington.
Well, I think we should go ahead and, you know, bill you for that. We need to say Michael Cutler is going to be in Washington on blank date, blank time. He wants to have a listening with, you know, the various committees. And
wouldn't
I'll tell you, Samantha Power is coming down the pike, too, and that's a whole other one, too. So get on the phone and talk about the bill, this bill, and say no to it. And hopefully the House and John Boehner will have some strength of his spine, and he'll do the right thing. But I think it needs to be public outcry.
Yeah, and do me one other favor, folks. Can you please reach out to Senator Sessions and Congressman Lou Barletta and Steve King, Senator Vitter, Senator Chuck Grassley, and let them know that we stand firmly behind them. They have shown
and our
incredible
senator from
courage.
South Carolina, Tim Scott, has also he voted no. He voted
no.
And
so when you disagree, absolutely spank them. And when you agree, folks, they need your support. They need to know they're not doing this in a vacuum, that there are people behind them. You have no idea what support does for somebody who's in the middle of a battle. We need to cheer them on.
True.
We need to thank them for what they're doing and commit ourselves to help them to get reelected when they run for reelection. If you're part of us, if you really honor we the people, I don't care if you're with the Hopping Kangaroo Party. Because the only party that really matters, as far as I'm concerned, is the party of we the people.
Yeah.
What do you think of that,
well,
Tim? Any last comments, Tim?
When I was in the service, I was in the Army. You know, it wasn't about color. It was about, if there was any color, it was green.
Yep.
You know, it was green or it was tan. And that's, I think that to me, what you said, you know, we're Americans first.
Yep.
And I just wish that people, my heartfelt desire is for people, you know, as we approach the 4th, to really let that sink in and feel American again. You know, when 9/11 happened, it was tragic as it was. One of the side effects, positive side effects, was we felt American again. But we've lost a part of the Americanship that allows us to agree or disagree civilly and be able to work it out. Instead, we're forcing each other to move, counter-move. And we're in a cultural battle now. And it's sad because the culture is no longer the American culture. It's a great American divide. So prayer is as we approach the 4th, the people would take stock in who they are. And find ways to come together, as you said, and be American again.
I couldn't have said it better myself. Can't disagree with you at all. And that's why this is so darn important. And that's why I said to you what I said when you said that I need to become more conservative. No, we all need to be American, and we need to pursue our dreams. And by the way, this comes back to the issue of states' rights. It's funny, but until I did some traveling around the country, it's easy to think that you live in the center of the universe. You know, the early astronomers thought that the Earth was the center of the universe. Now we know that we inhabit what amounts to a mote of dust suspended in the infinity of space. When you travel around the country...
Yeah, but we really do.
I'm sorry?
Yeah, but we really do.
Well, I'll tell you what, I've been to Charleston, and it is beautiful. But my point is this, that people that have different attitudes and different beliefs need to be able to express them, even if it means living in one area versus another area with like-minded folks, however you want to work it out. But we need to be respectful of each other. We need to understand that we don't all like vanilla ice cream versus chocolate ice cream. And I know for some people they see big moral issues. I understand that. But there are other folks who aren't going to come at it from the same perspective because of life experience, upbringing, a whole host of issues go into or factors go into the way we view the universe. But what's important is to keep an open dialogue. You watch most television programs, and I've given up counting hundreds of television shows, and it just seems as though what they want is a food fight. You know, if you could turn it into a Jerry Springer program and start throwing chairs at each other, I think they'd get even happier in some of these programs. In point of fact, what really wins the day is calm, level-headed discussions. My degree is in communications, arts, and sciences. I like to tell people I have a BA and BS, but I was on the debating team in high school and college. And our coaches very often wouldn't even tell us which side of the debate we had until 15 minutes before we went out there. And what that did was prepare us to understand both sides of the issue as best we could. And I think that we as Americans owe it to ourselves, nobody else, ourselves, to try to once in a while look at the other side, not as the enemy, but say to yourself, gee whiz, I wonder why that person disagrees with me. Is there any validity to what he or she is saying? You know, there are times that I've changed my opinion. And it's not because I'm a waffle, hardly. I think you know I'm strongly rooted in my belief system. But my beliefs have to be supported by empirical evidence. I was going to be an engineer or a scientist originally. So I'm an empiricist. But sometimes, you know, we learn something new every day, and sometimes the knowledge we acquire forces us to see things from a new perspective. I think it would really be wonderful for all Americans to just spend a day contemplating the position of those folks they agree with most vociferously and just say to yourself, is there any validity to what they're saying? Am I missing something? We may come back stronger than ever in our own beliefs, but think how important that challenge, self-challenge would be to helping make us complete human beings and more effective at what we do and believe. At least that's how I see it.
And,
how's
you know,
that for an idea?
I think it's great, but you've gone all dreamer on me now. I thought we were going to, you know, you've gone dreamer, but we're talking about the Dream Act that's about to turn into Nightmare on Elm Street. And I think it's really great. I really do. And I think most Americans do get along, and most Americans, you know, are nice people or would stop and help each other out. But this bill is, it's got to be contained. It's a contaminant that we don't want to let out. The law of unintended consequences of this bill, if it became a law,
Unintended. Lauren, you're giving them far too much credit for being decent. The proponents of this bill, as Jeff Sessions very aptly noted, this was not by accident. This was by design. And the design was motivated by greed. And they just simply want to flood the labor market with cheap labor. Here's an image for you. There's always room for a couple of extra oarsmen on the slave ship.
Oh, yeah, that's nice.
How does that work? Now, I'll step away from being dreamy-eyed for the moment, and let's be the hard-nosed pragmatists that we can all be. This is about importing so many worker bees on all levels that the value of labor falls through the floorboard. You know, I'll just say this, and we're going to wrap up. We're getting towards the end. In fact, there's going to be a new edition of The Social Contract coming out. I just wrote an article about how political asylum, something I feel very strongly about because we have to help those people whose lives are in danger, has been used by terrorists as a way of entering the country. So we should never allow our compassion to become a vulnerability. But I did an article for them. I did an article for Social Contract about the people who are making money off of illegal immigration, and you would be astonished at how much money is involved. And I compared these folks with this overwhelming desire for wealth to a malignancy. You know, cancers are very, very hungry creatures. They want nutrients more than anything else. They even build their own network of blood vessels so they can bathe themselves in nutrients the way that the likes of Gates and Bloomberg and the others can bathe themselves in wealth. And it really works well for them right up until the day that the patient dies of cancer or that this country dies of the unbelievable greed of a very small group of people. We've got to stop them in their tracks. There are only 535 members in both houses of Congress. There are 300 million Americans. I believe we have them outnumbered, but what do I know about math?
Well, hey, Mike, I'm going to have to run because it's Friday and I've got to go to another commitment. But I'll be back for more, I promise. Happy
so
4th of July. And God
thank
bless
you, so
you guys. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Lauren. I appreciate you joining us. And, Tim, I thank you for becoming part of my program this evening.
Mike, thank you for having me. All the best to you, and God bless this great union.
Absolutely.
While it lasts.
Well, and we can make it last lots longer. It's a matter of doing the work Americans must do, and that's take their citizenship seriously. And I hope that this program helps. I hope this program helps provide a different perspective. Have a great weekend, Tim. My best to everybody in South Carolina, the center of the universe. Folks, It was wonderful spending Friday with you, as always. Good to be back. Last week I was in Washington with the Act for America group, so it's really terrific to be here again. Hope you all have a wonderful weekend, and look forward to seeing, or at least speaking with all of you next week. Remember, folks, democracy is not a spectator sport. I'm counting on you to get involved. Check out the demonstration upcoming July 15th. I hope you will be there and join me and so many other great people, including the keynote speaker, a gentleman by the name of Colonel Alan West, true American hero. See you all next week. Goodbye for now.